Live from New York City, it's The Gary Null Show. And now, your host, Gary Null.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Null. Nice to have you with us today. You're going to learn about ASEI, it's a berry, and how it can help fight malaria, Texas A&M University. And we have about 12 other important studies that all come from peer-reviewed journals, all at respected institutions, and all showing you how we can live a longer and healthier life. Then we're going to take a look at some other issues. For example, we're going to hear how the head of the CDC, Judy Gerberding, could be in charge of overseeing all vaccine safety and efficacy at the CDC, and then turn around and leave the CDC and go to head the vaccine division at Merck, making millions of dollars. And you wonder why the New York Times or the Washington Post or CNN doesn't call out this gross conflict of interest, but they don't. In fact, in today's New York Times, on the front page, right up on the right-hand side, is a whole article about how good Facebook is because they're defending us from unscientific and fake news. Well, what does fake news look like? Well, if you challenge genetically modified foods like glyphosate and Roundup, well, that's fake. If you challenge the safety and efficacy of vaccines, that's fake. If you want to see if organic is better, no, that's fake. If you believe in body, mind, no, that's fake. If you believe in alternative anything, well, it's all fake. Wow. It's just amazing. I can't read a single article in the New York Times. I simply look at it each day just to see how far down the rabbit hole of incredulity and absolute gross systemic bias it goes. And these are the dilettante liberal elite punks, and I have no respect for them whatsoever, from the publisher on down. Yet still, those equally dilettante punks down on Wall Street and in Big Pharma and in every major industry, they fully support that. So just imagine you're now being told that your news is going to be censored to make sure you only get the right news. So, in that regard, today, I'm going to challenge them. I'm going to show them how the world actually works. We're going to have John Perkins, who was an economic hitman. He would go in, and he would offer presidents of countries gold, money, anything they wanted. Riches, it didn't matter. We would give it all to them, as long as we got to bring our neoliberal hegemonic philosophy in and control their country and resources and their body politic. If they should reject that, we'd give them a bullet that the jackals would come in, and they did, and assassinate them, and they did. And Henry Kissinger was behind this, and he was, and he's still alive. And the Clintons were behind this. But no one has ever, not once, in our history, ever held accountable. Does that tell you anything? And the media does not challenge that. So that's the media you want to trust. If someone lies to you about something, they're going to lie to you about anything. Therefore, there is no major media that I would trust, not NPR, certainly not the dilettante idiots at PBS. None of these people do I trust. What we have in America today is a massive disinformation campaign. So we have to be very conscious to challenge everything I say. If I say something, make me prove it, that it's legitimate, objective, and not coming from any bias, but hold the same standard for everyone else. In that light, today we will also quote an article specifically about everything going on concerning Joe Biden, and the left comes out, especially Anderson Cooper, that goofball, over on CNN. What a disgrace. By the way, he also, according to Tony Bates, contacted Tony Bates when I was being announced to come back on BAI and argued against it. True or not? nothing surprises me with anyone working for that propaganda mill. But there is one honest journalist among many that I do trust because he provides us with the objective information. His name is Max Blumenthal. And today he reports upon the think tank's shady arrangement with Burisma. That's the gas company at the center of Ukraine Gate. And yeah, Hunter Biden is up to his eyeballs in that deal. And yet the entire left has said, no, keep moving, nothing to see there. That's just not a story. It is the story. And we're going to share it with you exclusively today on this program. Max Blumenthal, Greystone, and the article is D.C. Atlantic's counsel raked in funding from Hunter Biden's corruption-stained Ukrainian employer while courting his VP father. The real story they're not willing to touch. So that's our show. We're taking on all issues. And we begin with health and healing. Now, according to Texas A&M University, despite our best efforts at eradicating malaria, which is a major killer, by the way, disease struck more than 200 million people just in the last year. Worse yet, the parasite that causes malaria is developing resistance to many antimalarial drugs, including the mainstream approach. So they're looking for new treatments, and now a group is reporting in ACS Omega have found that acai, you can pronounce it either way, is a berry and it's a superfood, and it can reduce parasites in the blood and prolong the survival of a person who is infected. That's good news. If you're not familiar, and if you've ever gone to Brazil, and I don't recommend you go to most places in Brazil because crime there is off the charts. It was off the charts when I was there. In fact, when I was first there, they had death squads. And you could actually follow the death squads, and you could see them pull up to a house, and you hear pop, 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 and then they get back in the car. They were killing any of the unionists or people who were challenging the power of the military and the ruling elite. And that went on for about 5 or 6 years, unstopped. There are beautiful places in Brazil. The people are wonderful. And in the middle of the streets, they have these little stands. Now, this is really cool because first time I saw one of these, I'd never seen one before. I had my brothers with me, Howard and Steve, and some friends, Neil Kramer, Jerry Krupman. We had gone down there. In fact, it was our second stop. I'd gone to Haiti, Trinidad, and went up into the mountains to see how aloe vera was actually manufactured. And I found the truth. It was, at that time, most of it made in America, or sold in America. It was not made in America. It was not grown in America. It was grown down in Dominican Republic up in the mountains and using pesticides. And they thought I was there to buy from them. So they showed me all around. And it was just filthy, dirty. And they would fill these drums up with just a gel and pour a preservative in it. And nothing was sanitary. And then they'd ship it off to American people, put it in a beautiful package instead of buying American-grown or certified organic aloe vera. In any case, we ended up down in Brazil, and there we are in a town, and there was this stall. I'm guessing it's about 12 foot by 12 foot. And it was all done in bamboo. It was very, very beautiful. And hanging from the ceiling and the walls were all these fruits. And the interesting thing is, we didn't know a single fruit. We'd never seen these. We're not talking about apples and oranges and bananas. We're talking about things that were unique to their rainforest. And they had a juicer there, and they had a water filter there. And I looked at the water filter and saw that it was okay. And everything was washed, and they'd cut it. So I tried a juice, and it was delicious. And then I tried another juice, and then I tried another juice. I drank 7 juices. They were not necessarily big glasses, but boy, was it exciting. And then for the next week, every day I'd go there, and I still didn't get all the juices. There were more than 40 different fruits. But one of those fruits that the person said was the most healing fruit. Because I asked him, I said, do people drink these juices just because they're tasty or because they're good for you? And he pointed up, he said that heals everything, heals everything. And I never will forget that. And that was SI. And it had a slightly pungent taste. It's not sweet, but it's real deep color, almost a purplish color. And he said, that's what the people use. Now we know that for good reason, that particular food is so rich in certain polyphenol compounds that have been linked to health benefits like weight loss, cardiovascular disease prevention, and decreased cancer risk. But a group of professors wanted to determine if that fruit could treat malaria. And if so, you know, that would be great because there's no toxic side effects. So the team extracted polyphenols from the acai berries and then treated malaria parasite cultures growing in a petri dish with the extracts. And they found a class of polyphenols called nonoanthocyanins. Nono, N-O-N, antho, A-N-T-H-O, cyanin, C-Y-A-N-I-N, non-anthocyanins. And these are phenolics, P-H-E-N-O-L-I-C-S, and they inhibited the growth of both the chloroquine-resistant and sensitive parasites. Then the researchers administered it, the polyphenols, to infected mice. And the treatment reduced the parasitic load in the mice's blood by 89.4%, almost 90% compared to the untreated. And all the mice were given polyphenols and survived for more than 15 days, whereas none of the untreated mice lived at all. So this is very exciting, something that could help, that can be grown all over the world in any tropical climate. And that's where most of the malaria comes, including in sub-Saharan Africa. So for my friends working at the UN, including one of the top people at the UN, by the way, who was kind enough when I did the egg project 20 years ago and came to the press conference, which is a high school, Robert F. Kennedy High School on the east side. It was packed. And afterwards came up and said, based upon the Egg Project, and just for those who don't know what the Egg Project is, at the Institute of Applied Biology, where I was a research fellow and director of anti-aging medicine research, I found that all foods, vegetables, fruits, legumes, nuts, seeds, grains, beans, pulses, tubers, all contain all 8 essential amino acids. Yet every textbook, including ones I studied to become a registered dietitian and a nutritionist and clinical studies, all those were wrong. They said only animal proteins, meaning your dairy, your fish, chicken, beef, pork, only those contained all 8 essential amino acids, which was a lie. But that gave them an advantage of being able to control the USDA's food policy pyramid, which meant that if you were a homemaker during the 1930s, 40s, 50s, 60s, 70s, and 80s, 90s, you use that food pyramid. You have to have meat 3 times a day. You have to have carbohydrates, like white bread, 3 times a day, or white rice. You have to have sugar, and regular sugar was fine. But it wasn't. It was all lies. Everything was lies. Everything. I was actually thrown out of dietetic class 5 times because I am politely, but I challenged when they said, well, it's not important where the glucose comes from or sucrose comes from, just get it into the patient's body. They need the calories. And I said, hold on a second. Are you saying, as you are right now on the board there, that a teaspoon of sugar coming from an apple and a teaspoon of white sucrose refined sugar are the same in the body? Yes, they're both the same. But they're not. Oh, yes, they are. And with that, they'd say, you can't disrupt my class. I'm not trying to disrupt your class. I'm simply trying to offer a challenge to what you're saying. So I'd go down and the person would say, oh, not again, Gary. I said, yeah, again. I said, I'm sorry, I can't sit there and hear an untruth because look around the room. Can you show me a single student in this school who is healthy? Show me one. Maybe I should have been a little more gentle because the teacher wasn't healthy or so, the dean. And I said, every dietitian in the school is obese. None of them are healthy. And they're learning to pass on misinformation. Now, they're going to go into a hospital. The doctor who knows nothing about nutrition or functionally illiterate about health and everything preventative, they're going to say, I'll give this person such calorie diet. And the dietitian's then responsible for selecting the foods. So you're going to give regular oil, which is pro-inflammatory, to a person who has an inflammatory disease like arthritis or diabetes or cancer. You're giving people who have cancer bacon in the morning. Well, what if bacon and the nitrites cause their cancer, contributed to it in the diet? None of this makes any sense to me. And so I go up to Flower Fifth Avenue Hospital, and I would look up all the scientific evidence. In that time, without computers, you had to fill out a little card, and they would give you the magazine, scientific magazine. Then you would study. Then you would flag with something like a Post-it, and you would give it back, and for 5 cents a page, they'd print out the studies. That's how it was done. And I had over 1 million pages in an apartment that I rented that was nothing but wall-to-wall, ceiling-to-floor, scientific studies and theory literature. And my older brother, Howard, administered it, and Steve was in the library virtually every single day. And that's what we did. And so I went in with all these studies, showing them that there's a difference in how a carbohydrate is metabolized in the body, how the liver processes it, and how when you're drinking something as pure sugar, a polysaccharide, it is different than a monosaccharide, different than a disaccharide. And I'm having to teach them basic nutritional biochemistry. And that's embarrassing when you think about it. And then when you try to share these articles, then they get offended again because now you've hit their ego. And people don't like having their belief systems challenged. And then they get very violent. But I finally got out, graduated. And then when I started to look in the laboratory at what was going wrong, and I fed a group of people a plant-based diet, the same one I'd given the animals, and the animals lived 32% longer, and that had never been done in any scientific experiment ever. I didn't even give water to the animals. I gave juices fresh made, which 97% of the juice is water, and they lived longer still. Then I modified their fast. So 2 days a week, they would have their nutrients, but in fasting form. They lived longer still. So by simple cause and effect, by not being a part of the consensus, remember, when you're a part of the consensus, you're not going to have the same capacity to break through and see its limitations as if you are on the outside looking in. When you're on the outside of anything looking in, you're always going to have a different perception. And so that's when I said, well, how is it some people around the world are living longer lives and are healthier than we in the United States, and they're not having meat as the center of their diet? It may be there occasionally, maybe on celebrations, holidays, but an awful lot of the world's population, the majority do not have meat three times a day. That's a reality, and I had to provide all the articles proving that. So that's when I did the study, and by a fluke, I thought I actually made a mistake. I thought that when I did an amino acid analysis, that I had made a mistake, so I wrote a note for Dr. Berman. I said, I've made a mistake. Could you just duplicate what I did and possibly show me where I made my mistake tomorrow? So I came back in. There was a note, no mistake. So I said, yes, there is a mistake. So I went through the whole study again, and again I came up with the fact that beans, in this case black beans, had all 8 essential amino acids in different patterns. So again, I asked a different scientist. I said, I've made a mistake. I'm not sure where it's at. Again, it came back, and the next day, you have made a mistake. Then I started to think, huh. So then I went out, and I got every nutritional textbook, including the one I used, Normal and Therapeutic Nutrition by Robinson, highly respected book, a lot of good information in it. And I reread that chapter, that only animal proteins are complete. Everything else is incomplete, and fruits and vegetables are very incomplete, meaning that if you didn't get a lot of fruits and vegetables, don't worry about it. You don't need it. You're getting your white bread and your white rice and your white sugar, and you're getting that meat, and you're getting diseased. And that's when I thought, uh-oh, wow. Wow, is it possible? And I remember that day that this happened, I remember Dr. Lana come upstairs, as she normally came up every day just to check on my work. That was part of her responsibility to check, what's Gary doing? Is he doing anything too strange? Yeah, they thought I was nuts. And because I was doing health work, and they didn't believe in health. They were overbeat. They were obese. They drank. They smoked. But they were smart. I mean, these were some very heady people in the best in their class in cancer and addiction. They were looking for the drugs, the patent. And she said, what's wrong? And I'm sitting at my desk, and I said, do you think that it's possible that the entire world of nutritional science has made an enormous error? She said, well, how's that possible? You have checks and balances. You have, you know, did you look up on MIT's nutrition department? Did you look up at Harvard's department of nutrition? I said, I looked everywhere. USDA, FDA, I looked everywhere. Everyone in the world is wrong. And she said, well, I doubt that. Make your case. So I went ahead and I called in a Dr. Hillard Fiske and my brother Steve, and I said, let's go over this again. It took us 16 months. We analyzed every single commonly consumed food and found that it was right. They all had amino acids. Therefore, here's the takeaway. There is never a need in your life to have an animal protein, ever. In fact, virtually 100% of the peer-reviewed science shows that you will be healthier with the more fruits and vegetables than a plant-based diet. All the science is on that side. The Mediterranean diet is a good example, with some exception of fish and occasional little meat, but it's primarily and principally a plant-based diet. And then those that are strictly plant-based diet, all the studies out of Loma Linda University, highly respected, a medical school in California, it supported that. But then that's supporting half of an issue. And in life, we shouldn't look at just half of an issue. We should always look at its opposite. We can't just accept our micro-awareness. We have to also examine the macro-awareness. And that's when I started a very long program, and it took years. And I looked at every single peer-reviewed study in the world to say, what happens when we eat the American diet as currently construed, and eat meat as a separate subset in dairy? Every single study showed that it was dangerous, precipitating disease and even shortening our lifespan, increasing gram-negative, let's say, hormone cancers like breast cancer, prostate cancer, colorectal cancer, uterine cancers. And I thought, wow. Kind of epiphany occurred when I'm running in the park one morning and I'm just analyzing, how could I explain this to people that everything you've been doing is wrong? Virtually everything you're doing, everything in your lifestyle, everything in your body politic, everything in your belief. And then I had to go into ancient cultures to see how we got there, and the theos concept and other concepts of why we believe in certain things and how hard it is for us to separate what we believe in from the reality what we should believe in, and how other people's reality historically become our reality without ever questioning, how hard it is to gain knowledge, and then how impossible it is to surrender knowledge, even when that knowledge we must surrender because it's no longer accurate. It never was infrequently. And therefore, becoming a part of a consensus is a very dangerous mindset, because once you're part of consensus, then orthodoxy becomes acceptable. Well, when orthodox in medicine and orthodox in census do not challenge us. We are right. We are the power, and we collapse all other systems under the power and full weight of our arrogance and hubris and ego, then where is the opportunity to show what's wrong? There is none. Even though historically, if you want to talk about Maimonides, Pliny the Elder, I'll be happy to talk with you about it. They broke through. And historically, but not in their own time, we can look back and see how people who broke through out of consensus were able to ultimately challenge consensus and lead us in a new way. But it didn't happen quickly. It never does. And if you doubt me, try to challenge the idea that chemotherapy, radiation, and surgery are the only treatments that are valid for treating cancer. And I'll show you all the studies and the actual investigation showing that natural and alternative approaches work much better, and they do not have science on their side. They manipulate it, and yet we don't challenge the paradigm, because the paradigma, coming from the Greek, pattern of belief, supersedes all reason, common sense, and any other universal truth. To maintain a fortress of firewalls around its individual collective truth. And hence the oncologists stick together. And each year about more or less 450,000 Americans try only orthodox therapy, nothing else, and they die. They're toe-tagged. Some flowers are never sent by the oncologist, who make hundreds of thousands of dollars off each person's life-death process. But then they use a euphemism, like Barack Obama. You know, it was a gallant fight. A courageous fight. No, it was unjustifiable homicide, because you're educated enough to be able to educate yourself differently, but you encased in a psychic alchemy concrete all of the vestiges of intellectual dialoguing. You lacked intellectual coupling capacity. That's the danger of anyone who prides themselves in being orthodox. You might as well talk with a sand pebble. You will receive no resonating input that is constructive back. And hence, virtually all of our systems have failed us. Not by intent, not by conspiracy, but by the limitation of human consciousness not expanding beyond the materialistic, reductionistic, Newtonian, linear concept that whatever truth there is, it is the only truth I can abide by, and that's the truth I've been conditioned to believe, and therefore do not ask me, do not even attempt to allow me a chance to deconstruct my own belief system, because if I do, I will not know what the hell to believe in, and my security, even though it's not a universal truth, it's my truth. If I treat this person with chemotherapy, if I'm a rheumatologist, treat him with a COX-2 inhibitor, if I treat him with a selective serotonin reuptake inhibitor, and it causes them who has depression to commit suicide, it is the logic, the perfect logic of the paradigm, that the paradigm is right, the patient died, therefore the patient is the fault, then it is not the paradigm. And we never challenge Democrats, Republicans, we never challenge the media, the New York Times, we never challenge the curriculum, let alone who's teaching it and how it's taught. We never challenge the police, as I did yesterday in a rather unbridled, full-passioned rant on someone sooner or later has to actually get up and talk truth to power, even though power will not budge. You could have not just 3 million people complaining about the environment. You could have 30 million people complaining about it. It will not matter, because those in power do not change. Power does not change. It either manifests and collectivizes itself by those in the circle of power, like the Clintons, the people around them who are all corrupt, who then supported corruptness, but sold it as if somehow it was uniquely beneficial to us to support them. It's uniquely beneficial for your child to eat sugar-coated cereal. It's uniquely beneficial for you on Sundays to make sure you have alcohol and that big overblown sandwich with the bacon and the French fries and the dripping cheese and all the other gobbledygook that you can put on that, because that's the way you watch football. And if you don't do that, then something's wrong with you. And you must put your money into their bank, and you must listen to Samuel L. Jackson. Now, there's a person that we should all trust, right? What's in your wallet? We're giving you 2% back on everything you buy. Cut. Here's your check, Samuel. Put it with all the other money you made. I'm going to do that today. Sam, can we redo the commercial? Why? Well, we're going to give you more money. Okay, I'll do anything. Me and LeBron James, you know, let's not talk about anything happening in China today, you know, like the 100 million people who are prisoners in China and having their organs transplanted. Let's not talk about that. Let's talk about doing business with them. Saudi Arabia also. Here's what I want you to do, Samuel. I want you to do this. Go in front of the camera and say, "Hi, I'm Samuel Jackson. I don't have to give you an attitude. I do that on stage, and it's always the same. You know, I act the same in every role, but that's all right. You're still going to come or not come. But here's the reality. This credit card, like all credit cards, is going to charge you more or less about 18%. But we're not going to focus upon the 18% you're going to pay unless, and we're really hoping, that you can't make a payment. Because if you're strapped, as about 200 million Americans are, over 100 million living at or below the poverty level, then you're going to pay partial payment. And you're going to sacrifice. You might not buy medicine or food. Something you're going to have to give up a little bit. Maybe go one day with one meal. But instead, now your interest on all your credit cards, all of them, automatically go to 36 to 38%. Even though the other credit cards you may not have even used yet or be making payment. They all adjust automatically. But there's no investigation in that. And then if you can't make a payment and you skip a payment altogether, just like on a student loan, you're going into compounding interest. Now you're up over 50%. And if it's a payday loan, it can go be rolled over. So every time you think, "I can't make it," they say, "No problem. We're rolling it over." What's it mean? Well, it just means that now we're having a compounding interest on a monthly basis. So you know that $300 television you bought that you didn't need? It now is costing you $1,000. But in a year, it'll cost you $2,000. Is that legal? Oh, yes, legal. Just ask all the legislators who receive money from the payday loan companies. Well, hold on a second. All those movies with the gangsters, you know, The Sopranos and Lucky Luciano and the Colombo family and Genovese family, they were going to jail for charging 50% interest. And you're saying that nobody goes to jail for charging me 500 or 1,000% interest? That's right. Yeah, ask Joe Biden. He supported him. So in other words, Samuel, do the commercial showing you're a fool if you take this credit card, because we're going to give you 2% and you're going to give us back 18%. So we're still making an 800% profit off a 1% cost to us. Wow. I didn't understand that. Well, that changes my perception of my needing something. So really, Samuel, you and every other person who's smart enough to be paid to make us believe you, we're going to be indebting ourselves for things we don't need with money we don't have, but you're making it very easy for us to have credit. Even right now, even after the first bubble, you're going to allow us to have money to buy a Cadillac Escalade or a new house when we don't even have enough money to feed ourselves. Yeah, that's it. Now you got it. Okay, I didn't understand that. Now it makes it better. So do that commercial next time. And the next time you do a commercial, I want you to show a normal kid from the 1940s and 50s, lean, wiry, running around, playing outside, coming in at lunch, the mom giving him a sandwich and soup, and they run back out again, coming back later. They want to go play kick the can and then come back in. Mom says, "How'd it go?" "Well, we built a fort and we played. And we got a little scrubbed up, and we got this, and we got that." And mom said, "Okay, it'll all heal." But now, we want you to say, we want your child, who is already overweight, to become obese. And we're going to have that child make sure that they get adult type 2 diabetes, and they're going to get arthritis, and they're going to get heart disease. And now we're going to be the fattest nation in the world per population. We're fatter by population than India with 1.36 billion people, and China, 1.4 billion people. We are the fattest nation in history per population, and we have more diseases than any other country. But we're spending more on doctors, and we love doctors. We worship doctors. Doctors go on television and say, I'm Dr. Schmuck. Don't challenge me. I know what I'm talking about. And you don't know what you're talking about. But Dr. Schmuck, isn't it true you're an oncologist and your patients are dying like crazy? That's irrelevant. We put up the good fight. But they still die. Should you be rewarded for effort or results? Well, we don't reward people in America for results, Gary. If we did, we'd have an awful lot of professionals who would be out on the street and begging. I see. So Wall Street gave us misinformation, but they got paid commissions going in and out of every trade. When they went broke, we, the working people, gave them through the Treasury, we gave them a total of $4 trillion plus the bad assets that they were washed through. But we didn't get anything. Not a single home was saved because of you. Not a single small business got a break. Yeah. So just remember this. The next time someone tells you everything's all right, it isn't. And when someone tells you, trust us, don't. And when someone says, we're better, smarter, they're not. We live in a nation of pure 100% pretense. We just have a hard time taking back the power to live by universal truths of etiquette, decency, spiritual values, humanistic values, and a concept that we all are sacred. Now, that doesn't fly well with the identifying political correctness where everything is sliced and diced because of identity politics. And I see it every day in the field of health. And that's why I share this information. So when I sent out the article to 7,000 publications, peer-reviewed journals, to see would they publish this because it would revolutionize the entire way we feed ourselves. We would prevent disease, heart disease, cancers, diabetes, obesity, from a meat-based diet, and we would save the environment. We reduce carbon footprint. It takes 90 gallons of water to grow a baked potato. It takes 1,300 gallons of water just for a quarter pound steak. That's just a quarter pound. Think of the whole animal at 1,000 pounds. And yet, it took 12 years and not a single word back from any publication. What could simply be one of the most important discoveries that we don't need any animal proteins at all. Simple reality. But the UN person came up to me and said, based upon your charts of 5,000 food combinations that can give us more protein that's usable by the body and all the fiber and healthy nutrients, we could save people all over Africa and Asia and South America because we could show them what to plant as companion plants that are drought resistant. I said, yeah, you can. And this person was very excited and said, wow. I'm going to go in there and get this on the road. And will you be on a committee if I can do this and come in and talk with the other people about what we can do in Africa? So I'd be happy to. A year goes by. Person shows up at the radio station one afternoon after my show. And said, Gary, I'm sorry. The UN is so corrupt at every level that no matter what I advocated and who I advocated to, this is not a low-level person in the UN. This is a high-level person. It was blocked. Why? Well, they've got non-fat dry milk going up out to one area, and that's a big deal, and that's the Mormons, and we got all these other people. Everybody's got a dog in there, and so nobody wants the people of Africa to be self-sufficient when it comes to raising their own foods that can make them healthier and prevent them from dying of malnutrition. That's it. I said, okay. I said, well, you did the best you could, and I thank you. That was good of you to do that. just a little thought that came to me as I was thinking about that last topic. In any case, now from a Institute of Technology in Germany, published in Nature Neuroscience, comes a study about urban green areas promote well-being for people unable to regulate negative emotions. According to this study published in Nature Neuroscience, any green area in the inner city can directly improve the well-being of urban citizens. So this is the result of an interdisciplinary study. And it was, I thought it was important because it said it reduced brain capacity for self-regulated negative feelings. And so why not we do this? Why don't we try to find one area around New York City, maybe Newark or Camden or any of the areas, any of the five boroughs that have an area that's specifically degraded. It's been completely ghettoized and hence victimizing the people living there, and see if we can't go in there and clear out and destroy buildings, have the city take it over, and then build, plant wonderful, sustainable urban gardens, green spaces. I'm talking about with koi ponds and fruit trees and green walls of sprouts where 100 to 200,000 green plants can be planted at a time, so people in the neighborhood can come and self-manage it and give free food to the people in the area and have meditation areas, have a Zen garden. And I'm willing to support that. I'll design it. This is what I do. Landscape architecture is my passion, my hobby. If any of you have ever been to my home in Florida, you'll know it's one of the most beautiful gardens in the world. I did it all. It was just a sand lot. Not now. And I'm willing to do that. And we, the people, can do that. In this audience, we have enough people who could do that. And let's show what can be done. Because if they're saying having a green space that people can go to and it improves their disposition, their motivation not to be negative because there's something of beauty, something that can empower them by associating with nature, imagine if we could also make it sustainable. Imagine if we could feed the people in that area who are already poor. Imagine if we could do classes on exercise each day and yoga and stretching and Pilates. And imagine if we could then have health counselors there to give people health and help them on diets. Imagine if we could do nutritional counseling. Imagine if we could help the seniors and give them protocols that could help them and actually have it there in that all that gigantic. You give a block and we'll create paradise. All right? So we got a lot of people listening. Now, we know we have to go through the corruption, self-interest, these city councils that, boy, in Manhattan, it's terrible. But there's an idea. There's a challenge for you. Now, let's see what I'm talking about when paradigms don't change, but we should challenge them because here and there we might have a breakthrough. All right? That's the latest on health and healing and a little, you know, a little personal background in the process. We're going to take a break and come back. Please stay with us. Nice to have you with us, everyone. We are seeing some absolutely remarkable improvements and changes in people who are in our three-month study group, 60 days on campus, possibly longer. And I won't go into the details until the final blood workups are done, so we have hard, objective data that we are able to change the DNA, repair the breakages, reduce the inflammatory markers, the cytokines, and actually increase mitochondria. It's a wonderful thing I'm seeing, and we're doing it. So you see, that's why I'm always an optimist. I'm an absolute pragmatist. When I see the problem, I'm going to call it out, but my emphasis is on solutions. And so that's good. By the way, we're finishing up tomorrow, the first week's health support group, which is a fundraiser for our sister station, WBAI. And next week, we'll have one more. And two people, a couple, were going to come, can't come, because a storm that hit really played havoc with their farmers, all their crops, and all the Midwest is now, a lot of the crops that were just ready to be harvested were destroyed. So we have room for two people who want to come next week, starting this Sunday, and spend a wonderful week. That's not in the anti-aging study, but is this the same location, but is a retreat. And you can call Luann if you'd like to join us. We have two spaces. We've been full for over 3 months. Call Luann at 903-881-7008. 903-881-7008 if you'd like to come for a retreat. Also, for all of our listeners who had listened on WBAI to their favorite programs, of which there are many and some outstanding programs, the Saturday morning program, the best in America on, David does a program on the history of Broadway and off-Broadway and theater. It's just one of those magical voices, deep experience, and a really good explanation of what's going on. And Mike, also we have, let's see who else. I don't remember the person named to the opera show, but it is a terrific show. I have it on in the background when I'm working out. But what we're doing until such time that it's resolved in court whether or not BAI will be able to return to the air or not, and we have no absolute way of knowing whether it's going to go one way or the other. There's going to be a hearing, I guess, tomorrow on this to either lift or stay a temporary restraining order. But you're not hearing anything right now live on BAI. So I'm inviting any producer or host of any program to contact Jesse at Progressive Radio Network and discuss with him to come on, so at least you can have a place on air where the audience can hear you. All right, so we're giving you a form, and Mitchell Cohen called yesterday, or wrote yesterday, and said, Gary, can we make room for the people on BAI are off the air now for over 10 days? And I said, sure. And so call this number, 646-926-5429, 646-926-5429. We will offer a home to the producers and hosts on WBI who've been locked out, and where the coup is occurring, where they're trying to take away our BAI and sell it. That's what they're really trying to do, go to the heart and honesty of it. And so we will do that. Now, I've offered this twice to Linda Perry, the program director, but she has rejected it. That's fine. I don't know if she's speaking for everybody, but if she's not, then those who would like to get on the air so they don't lose their audience, because you go 2 weeks and off the air, you're going to lose most of your audience. And that's unfortunate. So that is important. Also, we are going to hire two more lawyers on staff because we are about to do some serious lawsuits. But you can't be one of the typical Wall Street lawyers and these other high-priced lawyers. If that's your game, just making money, don't call. But if you're a conscientious lawyer who cares about people, has worked in the past, we're going to pay you. But we're not going to pay you, you know, what you're used to getting paid, because this is lawsuits to bring justice on issues. I won't go further than that, but we're about to launch, and you're going to hear about this in these lawsuits in the next couple of weeks, because we're taking on some very big and powerful people. They have enormous resources, political clout, but we have the truth on our side. Let's see if the truth wins out. You can call 646-926-5459. Speak with Travis, 646-926-5459. And now, I was asked, since we haven't done anything in the way of a special in a long time, to offer a quick special, and I'm going to offer you a quick special, then I'm going to go over to a commentary you haven't heard and you need to hear this about the Bidens and the company that his son worked for. But first, I want to give this. This has come back. We've been out of this for a year. I invented what was called digestive stuff to really help people with digestive issues. And today we're offering it a great special. And here's what's in this unique proprietary blend. You're getting 10 billion, that's with a B, billion of these probiotics, but a specific probiotic, the Bacillus subliminalis, which is, in my opinion, the most beneficial to your body. Not all probiotics are the same. This is the best of the best. This is the Rolls Royce, 10 billion. Plus, you're getting cellulase, amylase, protease, lipase. You're getting enzyme blends. You're getting bromelain, a papaya, pineapple, apple, and banana. You're also getting organic ginger root, an organic cinnamon bark, an organic aloe vera leaf, an organic marshmallow root, and anise seed, and fennel seed, and slippery elm bark, and stevia. That's it. It's just phenomenal for cleansing and detoxification. It's called digestive stuff. It's been out of stock for a year. And today we're throwing in a free detoxification, a natural approach, $40 DVD. So give a call. Everything's at a great price. I'm going to give you the number to call right now and get this. We've been out of stock on this, and everybody can benefit from cleansing your intestine. Everybody. Call, because you have no idea what's up there and how toxic it is. Call 877-627-5065. Again, it's back in stock for the first time today. 877-627-5065. 877-627-5065. And get your digestive stuff. Delicious tasting, but boy, is it good for you. We're finishing our program today with an article by Max Blumenthal, published in The Gray Zone. And it's about the D.C.'s Atlantic Council. Now, maybe you've never heard of it. And Max Blumenthal reports on the think tank's shady arrangement with Burisma. That's the gas company. It's the heart of this whole Ukraine gate situation. Here's what he has to say. And mind you, Max Blumenthal is an outstanding journalist. He is uncompromisable on integrity and honesty, unlike the journalist or pretend journalist at these other networks. Quote, with this relentless focus on corruption in Russia and Ukraine, the Atlantic Council has distinguished itself from other top-flight think tanks in Washington, D.C. Over the past several years, it has held innumerable conferences and panel discussions, issuing a string of reports and published literally hundreds of essays on Russia's kleptocracy and the scourge of Kremlin disinformation. At the same time, this institution has posed as a faithful partner to Ukraine's imperiled democracy, organizing countless programs on the urgency of economic reforms to tamp down on corruption in the country. But behind the curtain, the Atlantic Council has initiated a lucrative relationship with a corruption-tainted Ukrainian gas company, the Burisma Group, that is worth as much as $250,000 a year to the Atlantic Council. The partnership has paid for lavish conferences in Monaco and helped bring Burisma's oligarchical founder out of the cold. This alliance has remained stable even as Washington goes to war over allegations by President Donald Trump and his allies that former Vice President Joe Biden fired a Ukrainian prosecutor to defend his son's handsomely compensated position on Burisma's board. As Biden parries Trump's accusations, some of the former Vice President's most ardent defenders are emerging from the halls of the Atlantic Council, which featured Biden as a star speaker at its award ceremonies over the years. These advocates include Michael Carpenter, Biden's longtime foreign policy advisor and specialist on Ukraine, who has taken to the national media to support his embattled boss, Joe Biden. Even as Burisma's trail of influence buying finds its way into front page headlines, the Atlantic Council's partnership with the company is scarcely mentioned. Homing in on the partisan theater of Ukrainegate and tuning out the wider landscape of corruption, the Beltway Press routinely runs quotes from Atlantic Council experts on the scandal without acknowledging their employer's relationship with Hunter Biden's former employer. This case of obvious cronyism has not been overlooked because the Atlantic Council is a bit player, but because of its success in leveraging millions from foreign governments, the arms and energy industries, and the Western-friendly oligarchs to bring its influence to bear in the nation's capital. The Atlantic Council functions as a semi-official think tank of NATO in Washington. As such, it cultivates relationships with well-established policymakers who take a hard line against Russia and support the treaty's organization's perpetual expansion. Biden has been among the think tank's most enthusiastic and well-placed allies. In 2011, then-Vice President Biden delivered a keynote address at the Atlantic Council's Distinguished Leadership Awards. He returned to the think tank again in 2014 for another keynote at its Towards a Europe Whole and Free conference, which was dedicated to expanding NATO's influence and countering Russia aggression throughout the event. Speakers like Zinoviev Brzezinski, a former U.S. National Security Advisor, sniped at President Barack Obama for his insufficiently bellicose posture towards Russia, while former Secretary of State Madeleine Albright fretted over polls showing low public support for U.S. interventionism overseas. In his own comments, Biden emphasized the need to power Europe with non-Russian sources of natural gas. This provided a prime opportunity to Ukrainian suppliers like Burisma and U.S. energy titans. Many of these energy companies, from Chevron to Noble Energy, also happen to be top donors of money to the Atlantic Council. Quote, this would be a game changer for Europe, in my view, and we're ready to do everything in our power to help it happen, end quote. That's what Biden promised his audience. At the time, the Atlantic Council was pushing to ramp up the proxy war against pro-Russian forces in Ukraine. 2015, for instance, the think tank helped prepare a proposal for arming the Ukrainian military with offensive weaponry like anti-tank missiles. Given that the Atlantic Council has been funded by the two manufacturers of the weapons like Raytheon and Lockheed Martin, this created at least the appearance of a conflict of interest. In fact, the think tank presented its Distinguished Business Leadership Award to Lockheed Martin CEO Marilyn Hewson that same year. Dubious arrangements like these are not limited to arms manufacturers. Anders Aslan, a neoliberal economist who helps oversee the Atlantic Council's programming on Russia and Eastern Europe, was quietly paid by a consortium of Latvian banks to write an October 2017 paper highlighting the supposed progress they had made in battling corruption. Ashland was asked to write the piece by Sally Painter, a longtime lobbyist for Latvian financial institutions who was appointed to the Atlantic Council's board in 2017. At the same time, one of those banks was seeking access to the U.S. market and facing allegations it engaged in money laundering. Pay-for-play collaborations have helped grow the Atlantic Council's annual revenue from $2 million to over $20 million in the past decade. In every case, the think tank has churned out policy prescriptions that seem suited to its donor interest. Government contributions to the Atlantic Council include Gulf monarchies, the United States State Department, and various Turkish interests. In May 2017, Turkish President Erdogan was filmed watching as his personal guards brutalized Kurdish protesters in Washington, D.C. Lost in the headlines was the fact that he was on his way into an event at the Turkish ambassador's residence hosted by the Atlantic Council. Among the think tank's top individual contributors is Viktor Pinchuk, one of the wealthiest people in Ukraine and a prolific donor to the Clinton Foundation. Pinchuk donated $8.6 million to the Clinton nonprofit throughout Hillary Clinton's tenure as Secretary of State. Asked if Pinchuk was lobbying the State Department in Ukraine, his personal foundation told the Wall Street Journal, quote, "This cannot be seen as anything but a good thing." Obama's point person in Ukraine in the mainstream media reports about the Bidens scarcely pay any attention is given to the critical role that Joe Biden and other Obama administration officials played in the 2013-14 revolt that resulted in a fairly elected Russian-oriented government with a Western vassal. Yeah. In a relatively sympathetic New York profile of Hunter Biden, for example, the regime change operation was described by a reporter as, quote, "a merely public protest." During the height of the revolution of dignity that played out in Kiev's Maidan Square, then Assistant Secretary of State Victoria Nuland boasted that the U.S. had, quote, "invested $5 billion since 1991 in Ukrainian civil society." On a December 2013 tour of the Maidan, Nuland personally handed out cookies to protesters alongside Jeffrey Pyatt, U.S. ambassador to Ukraine at the time. In a phone conversation that leaked 2 months later, the two U.S. diplomats could be heard plotting out the future government of the country, discussing Ukrainian politicians as though they were chess pieces. Quote, "I think Yats is the guy who's got the economic experience," Nuland said, essentially declaring that Yatsenyuk, the next prime minister. Frustrated with the European Union's reluctance to inflame tensions with Moscow, Nuland exclaimed, quote, "F the EU," end quote. By mid-February 2014, the Maidan Revolt had succeeded in overthrowing President Viktor Yanukovych, which, with the help of the far-right ultra-nationalist street muscle, with a new U.S.-approved government in power. Biden assumed a personal role in dictating Ukraine's day-to-day affairs. Quote, "No one in the U.S. government has wielded more influence over Ukraine than Vice President Joe Biden," Foreign Affairs quoted. The Atlantic Council also described Biden as, quote, "the point person in Ukraine in the Obama administration." Quote, "Ukraine was the top or one of the top three foreign policy issues we were concentrating on," end quote, said Carpenter, Biden's foreign policy advisor. Quote, "Biden was front and center," end quote. Biden made his first visit to the post-Maidan government of Ukraine in April 2014, just as Kiev was launching its anti-terrorist operations against separatists who broke off from the new NATO-oriented Ukraine and its nationalist government and formed so-called People's Republics. So, Hunter Biden starred at one of Burima's energy conferences in Monaco, which are today sponsored by Atlantic Council. And then the ouster of Yanukovych put the founder and president of Burisma, this oligarch, in a delicate spot. And it served him well. And that's where they brought in Biden's son. And hence it goes. I've only given you half the article. The other half, you can read for yourself. But what it shows is Hunter Biden was not a stranger, quote, to trading in his father's name or influence. He had served on the board of Amtrak, the train line his father famously rode more than 8,000 times, earning him the nickname Amtrak Joe. Somehow he also rose to senior vice president of the MBNA, the bank that was the top contributor to Joe Biden's Senate campaign. And moreover, the vice president's son reaped a board position on the National Democratic Institute, a U.S.-funded, quote, democracy promotion organization that was heavily involved in pushing regime change in Ukraine. And then there was the Burisma, which handed him a position on its board despite his total lack of experience in the energy industry and in Ukraine affairs. Hunter Biden was paid $50,000 a month by the oligarch, and that's how it worked. All right. So back in Washington, the arrangement between the son of the vice president and the less than scrupulous Ukrainian oligarch was raising eyebrows. But nothing happened. This is the story you have not been told. This is how it works in Washington. And unfortunately, every one of the media, this is me talking now, not Max Blumenthal, and I'll finish with this. Every major media has the complete ability to do the same research Max Blumenthal did. He exposed all the corruption behind the scenes, the interlocking vested interest, like the Atlantic Council, Burisma, the Russian oligarch, or the Ukrainian oligarch, who has all kinds of scandals of corruption behind him, and then selecting the vice president's son. And then we're led to believe that there's nothing there to look at. And as Anderson Cooper said 2 nights ago, oh, there's no proof of these allegations. No one has done the work that Max Blumenthal has done. He found the truth, and not a single person in the media is going to report on it. So they can continue the lie that Joe Biden, and by extension his son, did nothing wrong when it was a pay-to-play at every angle. I'm Gary Nall. Thank you all for listening, and have a nice day.